All right. Well, welcome back to, I don't know if this is the last episode of the year, the second to last. Frankly, I have not planned that.
Gonna go with the flow kind of gals, kind of podcast hosts.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the most fun way to do it? But for this episode of Shabbat Spiels, Gabby and I have decided, we've been inspired by the upcoming holiday of Lag BaOmer, which is frankly a very obscure Jewish holiday that a lot of us, I mean, personally, I didn't even know what it was until I was invited by the Brody Jewish Center to go to a bonfire because of it. But we were inspired to kind of look into various other less known Jewish holidays. I know everyone knows what Passover and Hanukkah is, but I don't know, do you know what Tu B'Av is or Sigd is? I don't know. I personally didn't before this.
Well, we know now and we're ready to share it with everyone.
So we're going to go through a bunch of different Jewish holidays, and we're just going to talk about, like, their significance and how you celebrate, and I don't know, maybe you'll be inspired to have one more reason to celebrate something throughout the year.
Yeah, and everyone always makes the joke about Jewish holidays that they're all some sort of pattern of, they tried to kill us, we survived, so let's eat, or some other, you know, catchy phrase like that. But a lot of these minor, more niche holidays are actually just days of rejoicing or celebrating culture or celebrating other happy things, not just avoiding persecution. And we kind of think it's fun to just talk about them for a little bit. And, you know, some of them are still tragedies, but we can't have it all.
So the first one that we're going to talk about is the one that we really were inspired by, which is Lag BaOmer. It's coming up this year on April 29th and 30th, so just a few days from now. And it's a pretty minor holiday. It's known for bonfires, weddings, and haircuts. I don't know, figure out what those three have in common. But it takes place about a month after Passover, and it's basically a break from the semi-mourning of the Omer. Key aspects of Lag BaOmer include holding Jewish weddings. It's the one day during the Omer when Jewish law permits them, lighting bonfires and getting haircuts. And there's a few explanations of why we celebrate it, but none of them are definitive. We know that the Omer is a time of semi-mourning when weddings and other celebrations are forbidden. And a sign of grief, observant Jews do not cut their hair. Anthropologists say that many people have similar periods of restraint in the early spring to symbolize their concerns about the growth of their crops. But the most often cited explanation for Jewish practices comes from the Talmud, which tells us that during the season, a plague killed thousands of Rabbi Akiva's students because they did not treat one another respectfully. The mourning behavior is presumably in memory of those students and their severe punishment. Hmm. There's also another medieval tradition that the plague, like the Black Plague, seized on Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day of the Omer. The Hebrew letters Lamed and Gimel, which make up the acronym LAG, have been combined to the numerical value of 33. And so as a result, Lag BaOmer became a happy day, interrupting the sadness of the Omer period for 24 hours. And for anybody who's interested in numerology, Judaism definitely is the practice for them. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Kabbalah, but that's basically a numerologist's dream. It's like this, I don't even know how to explain it, but it's like a book in the Jewish religion that's all about like mysticism and cosmogony and all this interesting stuff that is very much beyond me, but I just find it interesting that a lot of those things combine to, like, a lot of letters combine to form different numbers, and that's kind of one of the reasons some people think that we celebrate Lag BaOmer. But in general, I think it's a pretty fun-sounding holiday to me. It's like, considering it's a break from the mourning period, people just get to have fun, either throw a wedding, a bonfire, just come together in the springtime, and I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Seems like also extra relevant now because, like, as you were saying, the Black Plague seized on Lag BaOmer. So maybe we can have like one COVID-free day. Maybe magically, you know, coronavirus will just leave for a single day.
Honestly, that is like kind of symbolic. Let's just hope that this Jewish holiday comes through for us. Mm-hmm. No, you never know. Maybe some like crazy piece of news from the CDC is about to come out on April 29th.
They dropped we reached herd immunity on Lag BaOmer. That'd be crazy.
I also think it's kind of funny because this episode's going to come out after Lag BaOmer.
I know, so we'll be super proven wrong and it's fine.
I guess we'll find out.
Okay, ready for the next one?
Yeah, so what's the next one like after this one in chronological order?
Yeah, so by the way, we are going chronologically starting with Lag BaOmer because that is, well, by the time this comes out, it will have been yesterday. But so we're like wrapping around the calendar. But basically the next one that comes up is Tisha B'Av, which usually takes place in the summertime, like July or August. And this is actually not a minor holiday. It's one of the fast days and like no work days. But a lot of like secular Jews don't necessarily celebrate it as much as some of the other ones. But Tisha B'Av is the day that we mourn the destruction of both the first and the second temple in Jerusalem. The first temple destroyed by the Babylonian Empire and the second one by the Roman Empire. And it's kind of like an all-encompassing day to kind of remember tragedies in Jewish history. Remember when we said this was about celebrations?
Well, I mean, like, can you really go through Jewish history without like some sort of mourning?
I know. So it's just a day in the summer where you remember the destruction of the temple and the tragedy that was to Jewish people and Jewish history, and fast for it. On to better things, Esther. Take it away with the next Jewish holiday.
Yeah, the next Jewish holiday that we're going to cover is, following that, is Tu B'Av, which is on July 23rd and 24th of this year. By the way, like, I don't know if you guys have noticed yet, but Jewish holidays just go by the beat of their own drum, because they're going by the Jewish calendar. So, like, it might be July 23rd and 24th this year, but I have no clue what it's going to be next year. But basically what Tu B'Av is like the Valentine's Day for Jews, and it's also, like, the Valentine's Day in Israel, part two. Tu B'Av is literally translates to the 15th day of Av. It's both an ancient and modern holiday. Originally, it was a post-biblical day of joy. It served as a matchmaking day for unmarried women in the Second Temple period, which was before the fall of Jerusalem in 70 CE. For those of you that are confused, go back to our first episode when we talked about the basically chronological Jewish history. But Tu B'Av was almost unnoticed in the Jewish calendar for many centuries after that. But it's been sort of rejuvenated in recent decades, especially in the modern day state of Israel. In its modern day incarnation, it's gradually becoming a Hebrew Jewish day of love, slightly resembling Valentine's Day in English speaking countries. There's really no way to know exactly how Tu B'Av began. The first mention of it was in the Mishnah, which was compiled and edited in the end of the second century. And this one rabbi, or maybe not rabbi, some guy, really don't know who he is, but he was quoted saying, "There were no better or happier days for the people of Israel than the 15th of Av and Yom Kippur, since on these days the daughters of Israel / Jerusalem go out dressed in white and dance in the vineyards. What were they saying? Young man, consider whom you choose to be your wife." I don't know how I feel about the whole, like, girls going out trying to find husbands, but, you know, yeah. You just go out and find a partner these days. That's the modern-day reincarnation of this in non-English-speaking countries, a.k.a. Israel. For those of you that don't know, by the way, the Mishnah is the first major written collection of Jewish oral traditions known as the Oral Torah. So just in case you guys didn't know what I was talking about when I mentioned the Mishnah. But basically, it should be also noted that Tu B'Av, like other Jewish holidays like Passover, Sukkot, and Tu B'Shvat, begins on the night between the 14th and the 15th day of the Hebrew month, since this is the night of the full moon in our lunar calendar. So this is a fun link, I think, because it's sort of linking the night of a full moon with romance, love, and fertility. And it's not uncommon in other ancient cultures. So for almost 19th century, between the destruction of Jerusalem and the reestablishment of the Jewish independence in the State of Israel in 1948, the only commemoration of Tu B'Av was the morning prayer service that did not include any other prayers. But in recent decades, it's sort of become like a fun holiday to show your love. So this year, it's on July 23rd and 24th. So if anyone has a crush on me, you better tell me before this.
Hey, they got a couple months to come out of the woodwork, but, I mean, get prepared.
I'm warning them ahead of time. They have some time.
All of Esther's suitors.
They have literally zero excuses. They have, 3 months? I can't do math.
Who knows? What is time anymore?
Sorry, I just remembered. This is kind of reminding me of, like, those Alma, like, posts where they're, like,
yeah,
looking for love. I need to make one of those for Tu B'Av.
Looking for a Tu B'Av Valentine.
Exactly. But what's up next, Gabby?
Okay, so the next one in the calendar is Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah. So this is like the part of the calendar, the Jewish holiday calendar, where there's like a million holidays in a row. So I'm skipping over Sukkot because it's not that niche or minor. I mean, we all...
You just like wave some lemon things, lemon-looking
things. The lulav and etrog, some may say. But Shmini Atzeret is the first day after the last day of Sukkot. So Sukkot is 7 days, and on like the would-be eighth day is Shmini Atzeret. It's kind of like partially considered part of Sukkot, but also its own thing. A lot of like these next few holidays like kind of bleed into each other due to time difference, problems between Israel and the diaspora, which is really interesting. But the observances for Shmini Atzeret generally are basically the same as the rest of Sukkot, except for four significant differences. The first one is that you don't shake the lulav and etrog anymore, or as Esther would say, the lemon thing.
that's when you know I'm like a secular Jew?
A bagel and lox Jew.
Bagel and lox
to reference our last podcast. Oh my god, look at us referencing our own work.
True artists.
Content creators. Anyway, the second difference is that although we have our own meals and recite Kiddush in the sukkah, we no longer say the blessing to sanctify us through the commandment to dwell in it, as we did in the previous 7 days. And the third one is that in the synagogue, after the Torah reading, we recite the memorial prayer Yizkor. And then the last thing is that you pray for rain, because it's like the harvest season and all of that fun stuff. This is in fall, by the way. I did not mention that. And so in Israel, Simchat Torah, which, if you do not recall, is when we celebrate the Torah, is synonymous with Shmini Atzeret. But again, because of this time difference situation in the diaspora, Simchat Torah comes after Shmini Atzeret. And so again, just like to touch on Simchat Torah, it's a celebration of the Torah, and it's often linked to Jewish visibility. Like, Esther, have you seen, like, in New York City, like, when people are, like Orthodox people are out in the streets with, like, mini Torahs and are, like, celebrating?
Yeah, they have, like, big buses, and they, like, drive around, and they ask you if you're Jewish, and you're maybe. I don't know if I am in this moment right now.
But that kind of brings me into the next holiday, which is Sigd, which is an Ethiopian Jewish holiday. So it's a holiday specifically celebrated by the Beta Israel group of the Jewish community. It occurs 50 days after Yom Kippur. So you might be wondering why there's a holiday that, like, just one subsect of the Jewish diaspora and community, actually not diaspora, they're in Israel. But anyways, why one subsect of the Jewish community celebrates it. And that's, again, to, like, tap into your Jewish history knowledge. Ethiopian Jews were quite separated and isolated from the rest of the global Jewish community for, like, a really, really long time, until they were basically airlifted into Israel during their Aliyah, which was not that long ago. It was after the establishment of the modern state of Israel. So over the course of that isolation and kind of living within themselves, the Ethiopian community developed their own customs, Sigd being one of them. So Sigd is about accepting the Torah and yearning for Israel and the temple. And it's thought to be the date on which God first revealed himself to Moses. And what's interesting is that it's kind of like a secondary Yom Kippur, in the fact that Yom Kippur is very individual self-examination and reflection and repentance. But Sigd is like a communal introspection, because according to tradition, in order to be worthy to return to Jerusalem from exile, the public must engage in communal introspection and repentance. So it's kind of like, all of a sudden, the sins of the entire Ethiopian Jewish community are forgiven during Yom Kippur and those following 50 days, with a culminating celebration that is Sigd. And I think some other like practices are fasting, reading from the five books of Moses in addition to Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. They recite Psalms, pray for the rebuilding of the temple. And most modernly, which is what kind of reminds me of Simchat Torah in New York City, is that it's an opportunity to raise Ethiopian Jewish visibility in Israel and to educate Israeli Jews about Beta Israel customs, which are a little bit overlooked just in, like, Israeli civil society.
I think that's so cool that there's, like, I haven't really heard of that many holidays that are, like, specific to the diaspora, like, specific to particular groups in the diaspora, not, like, to the entire Jewish population.
Yeah. What's interesting, too, is, like, this is kind of a reversal of patterns, where this was a holiday that was developed in the diaspora and is now brought back into the homeland, like, into Israel, as opposed to, like, every other holiday, which began in Israel, that the diaspora is responsible for figuring out how to replicate.
Yeah, because you notice that, like, a lot, like, Ashkenazi Jews might celebrate Passover different than,
Yeah, so it's like a reversal of that pattern, which is really awesome. And shout out to Beta Israel for going against the grain.
Yeah. So up next after that is Tu B'Shvat. So I don't know if I'm pronouncing any of these correctly. I really hope I am. But this is basically the birthday of the trees. It's a time for seders, tree planting, a lot more. I'm really happy I'm talking about this holiday because it's like the ultimate crunchy holiday, in my opinion.
Esther just sticks to her brand and will not depart.
I'm not going to lie. Like, when we were looking up holidays to talk about, I was like, Gabby, like, I call Tu B'Shavat to talk about it.
It's like it fits in my repertoire way too hard.
Yeah. I'm currently wearing overalls, like a bandana. I need to talk about this. But the name of this festival is actually its date.
It's just so funny.
We need to take a minute to collect ourselves. I'm also wearing Blundstones.
We get it, Esther.
Yeah. So, like, I need to talk about this holiday. So, the name of the festival is actually its date. It's kind of like a lot of other Jewish holidays, too. It's a pronunciation of the Hebrew letters for the number 15, like kind of like Tu B'Av. And it falls in the Hebrew month of Shavuot. So, traditionally, Tu B'Shavat was not a Jewish festival, but it just marked an important date for Jewish farmers in ancient times. The Torah states that, quote, when you enter the land of Israel and plant any tree for food, you shall regard its fruit as forbidden. 3 years it shall be forbidden for you not to be eaten. And that's written in Leviticus. So the fruit of the fourth year was to be offered to the priests in the temple as a gift of gratitude for the bounty of the land, and the fifth year fruit and all subsequent fruit was finally for the farmer. This law, however, raised the question of how farmers were to mark the birthday of a tree. So the rabbis therefore established the 15th of the month of Shavuot as a general birthday for all trees, regardless of when they were actually planted. Which is very interesting, and I feel like that kind of, that's an interesting way to go about it, because, like, what are you going to do, like, label trees? Kind of like you label cows. So fruit trees were also to be awarded, like, a special status in the Torah because of their importance in sustaining life and as a symbol of God's divine favor. So even during times of war, God warned the Israelites, when in your war against a city, you have to besiege it a long time in order to capture it. You must not destroy its trees. Are trees of the field human to withdraw before you into the besieged city? Only trees that you know do not yield food may be destroyed. So it's kind of showing, like, the divinity of food and destroying it. And I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but it's the fact that my mom, like, never let me throw out food ever. Mm-hmm. And Jewish parents just, like, grandparents specifically, do not let you get rid of food or waste it. I don't know if there's any connection between that, but I just found that funny. So in medieval times, people who, like, followed the Kabbalah, which is, as I mentioned earlier, Jewish mysticism, gave Tu B'Shavat, like, even greater spiritual significance. They saw it as a vehicle for mystical ideas, and they sort of created, like, new symbolic rituals to follow it. So according to one type of the Kabbalah, which is just, like, people who followed, like, one guy who studied it. His name was Isaac Luria. I don't know if that has any significance to you, but basically people who followed his version of the Kabbalah, they believed that all physical forms, including human beings, hide within them a spark of the divine presence. This is similar to some kinds of fruit or nuts, which hide within them seeds of new life and potential growth. So in Jewish mysticism, human actions can release these sparks and help increase God's presence in the world. So on Tu B'Shavat, the Kabbalists would eat certain fruits associated with the land of Israel as a symbolic way to release these divine sparks. That's kind of like a mystic way to look about it. Nowadays, like in modern times, Tu B'Shavat has also brought on a new meaning because, especially for early Zionists, like they were going to pretty unfarmable land and creating very, very life-preserving circumstances in the desert, essentially. And so Tu B'Shavat is sort of a celebration of that. And a lot of people like to donate to various funds that promote, like, reforesting Israel. But for environmentalists, Tu B'Shavat is an ancient and authentic, like, Jewish Earth Day, which educates Jews about the Jewish tradition's advocacy and responsibility for God's creation through ecological activism. And so some people like hold seders during this time, some people like to plant trees, and it's basically like an Earth Day, but it sort of connects our values to stewardship of the earth, which I find really interesting.
Cool.
And I really do think that this holiday fits me.
It does. It actually really does.
And like, did I give anyone the date? No, I did not. So Tu B'Shavat is January 16th and 17th. So the reason that we sort of just jumped all the way to the next year is because we started with Lag Ba'Omer, and so we're sort of going consecutively after that.
Next up is Yom HaShoah.
So I know that we said we're not going to do too many sad holidays, but this is one of the last sad holidays we'll talk about. I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard of it, but the full name of the day of commemorating the victims of the Holocaust is called Yom HaShoah, and it's literally the day of remembrance of the Holocaust and the heroism. It's marked on the 27th day of the month of Nisan, a week after the seventh day of Passover, and a week before Yom HaZikaron, a memorial for Memorial Day for Israel's fallen soldiers, which is a sneak peek to what Gabby will be talking about quite soon. So basically, on April 12th, 1951, the Knesset, which is the Israeli parliament, officially selected this date, and then the full name became formal in a law that was enacted by the Knesset, which is the Israeli parliament, on August 19th, 1953. Although the date was established by the Israeli government, it has become a day commemorated by Jewish communities and individuals worldwide. And I think that this holiday is also interesting in its significance because it's one of, like, the more modern Jewish holidays, just because the Holocaust was, like, a modern occurrence. So in the early 1950s, sort of to give a little background on how this holiday came about, education about the Holocaust emphasized the suffering inflicted on millions of European Jews by the Nazis, but surveys conducted in the late 1950s indicated that a lot of young Israelis did not sympathize with the victims of the Holocaust, since they believed that European Jews were led like sheep for slaughter. I actually find this fact really interesting. I was reading about it pretty recently in a book that I was reading about like Israel and its history. Learning that Israelis actually did not really sympathize with Holocaust victims and did not understand, like, how this tragedy came to be just because they were not here. A lot of them were not European Jews. Mm-hmm. And so the Israeli education curriculum began to shift the emphasis to documenting how Jews resisted their Nazi tormentors through passive resistance, retaining their human dignity in the most unbearable conditions, and by active resistance, by fighting the Nazis in the ghettos and joining underground partisans who battled the Third Reich in its occupied territories. So one thing that is very much associated with Yom HaShoah is the siren. So since the early 1960s, the sound of a siren on Yom HaShoah stops traffic and pedestrians throughout the state of Israel for 2 minutes of silent devotion. The siren blows at sundown as the holiday begins, and once again at 11 a.m. the following morning. All radio and television programs during this day are connected in one way or another with the Jewish destiny in World War II, including personal interviews with survivors. And so basically this entire day is just a commemoration of that event and learning more about it. That's pretty much it.
All right, so moving on. The next set of holidays coming up is Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. So these are two holidays right in a row. And Yom HaZikaron is Israel's Memorial Day for fallen soldiers. And then Yom HaAtzmaut is Israeli Independence Day. So these, again, similar to Yom HaShoah, are modern holidays, haven't been around until Israel existed. But the link between these two and, like, why they happen one after the other is a little bit clear. But to clarify, it's because, you know, Israelis owe the actual independence, the very existence of the State of Israel, to the soldiers who sacrificed their lives for it. So on Yom HaZikaron, on Israel's Memorial Day, there's a lot of celebrations, such as a ceremony on Mount Herzl in Jerusalem, where the Israeli flag is raised from half-staff to the top of the pole to mark the transition from Yom HaZikaron to Yom HaAtzmaut. And so after this kind of day of remembrance and gratitude to fallen soldiers and also mourning, there's kind of this, like, immediate switch to celebration for Israeli Independence Day. And that's when the flag is raised from half staff to the top. And this is a day of parades, of celebrations, of public shows, of singing and dancing to traditional Israeli songs and dances. Army camps are open for civilians to visit and to display recent technological achievements of the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF. And Yom HaAtzmaut is concluded with the ceremony of granting the Israel Prize, which recognizes individual Israelis for their unique contribution to the country's culture, sciences, arts, and the humanities. Personally, I used to celebrate what we called the Yoms in my Jewish day school. Adine's nodding along. It was always, like, two of the best days because in, like, the middle yoms. Of the Yoms. Everyone was so excited for the Yoms because, like, two random days that, like, the public schools didn't have off. We didn't have off of school, but, like, we spent all day long in school just celebrating these holidays. And so it was really fun to, like, just have a celebration day in school for Israel.
Go back in time and go to a Jewish day school. Eden was always telling me about, shout out to Eden, but she's always telling me about, like, all the celebrations you guys had for Jewish holidays. And meanwhile, everyone in my school was like, thanks for Jewish holidays for letting us have a day off.
Yeah, no, back to, like, when we were talking about Sukkot and then Simchat Torah, Shmini Atzeret, like, even, isn't Shavuot around there too? Like, nope. Adin is saying I'm incorrect.
At the end of the week.
Too many holidays that start with S, but they're not all at the same time. But anyways, around that time, oh, and like Yom Kippur is around then too. Like, we just don't have school in the fall, like at a Jewish day school.
We had a single full week of school until like November.
Yeah, from September to November, like you just don't have a single full week. With like even with secular holidays like our Memorial Day and Rosh Hashanah, like there's just nothing. Anyways, I'm blabbering. Continue to the next holiday.
I think that's it. That is literally all our holidays. Sorry, I had to break out the English accent at one point.
Perfect. I feel like we all are, you know.
You're all caught up. So now, this is a quick plug for the Brody Jewish Center. Come celebrate Lag BaOmer with us. I think there's an event happening.
Wait, this is coming out after Lag BaOmer.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Sick. We hope you all had so much fun at the Lag BaOmer celebration yesterday, and I hope
you guys have best all been there.
I hope it inspired you to celebrate some of the other niche yet fun and important Jewish holidays and to learn about what they mean to our history as a people.
Yeah, we love you guys. Thanks for listening.
Shabbat Shalom.